right here, this right here, is quite the milestone for two legit nobodies who just a couple years ago were drug addicted, just terrible people.
Yeah, great really fucking dudes.
Had nothing to offer to anybody.
Ourselves?
Yeah. Just grade A dirtbag. And this is actually something that I'm trying to change about. Because even people like, okay, look, first of all, let's just say this is episode number 30.
It is,
okay?
Dude.
This is cool. It's big. It's almost as many episodes as years I am old, which is crazy because I'm old as dirt. But like I was saying,
see,
something that even as a person who I'm talking about,
right,
this, addicts, there's a stigma surrounding addicts.
Yeah.
And in some cases, obviously, there's reasons. It's like people say stereotypes. Stereotypes exist for a reason because a lot of the stereotypes are true.
Yeah.
A lot of Asians are good at math. Black people are really fast. Like, they run, like...
So they say.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's about all I can think. You know what I mean? Italians smoke on the toilet.
Pasta.
They talk with their hands, and I do that.
Is that valid? Is that
valid? That one's legit.
Okay.
Because my great-grandma was straight from Italy, Genevieve.
So I'm guessing when she started doing this, you were like, oh fuck.
Yeah, I was like, damn.
Oh, shit.
If grandma said, god damn,
oh,
I was like, oh, we about to die. Because grandma would not cuss. God damn was like... She just said cunt right to my mom.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Priest.
So trying to get the stigma changed. Now, for people that don't understand what I'm talking about, the stigma of like somebody says that they're an addict, and immediately in that person's mind, they have a picture of what that person is. And you've seen those images where it's like six images and it's like what I think I do, what my friends think I do, what my mom thinks I do.
Exactly like what they taught us in elementary school, the DARE program. Remember that? They put a stigma on absolutely everything and what these people do that are on these things.
And that was all during the war on drugs, which we all know is a huge failure. It's clogged up the prison systems. It's put people who are genuine and good people who got caught up in the wrong shit, it put them in a place where they're going to be trained to be hardened criminals.
Yeah.
We've gone into jail. You've gone into DOC before. Nobody's in there bettering themselves.
No.
This is a thing that I post a lot about on Instagram because it's something I'm super passionate about.
I mean, there are the people who have been there for years, right?
Of course.
And, yeah, they probably made certain transitions to get where they're at now because I'm sure that before they were in there, I'm sure they were fucking shitbags or whatever, you know? But, yeah, I mean... A lot of the times people don't give a fuck, but a lot of the times the people that do the damn thing. So, I mean, that's something that I do want to put out there as well. But, like, yeah, most of the time it's what do you think prison is? You can get drugs, like,
you're at fucking... Prison systems are overrun with drugs.
Yeah.
There's really no... Like, they have groups and things like that, but it's really led by other inmates and things like that.
And a lot of the time it's just like, I want to get time kicked off.
Yeah,
so they'll do that.
Yeah, they offer, you know, if you do for every class you do, you know, they take an extra day off off of your full sentence. So there's an incentive there that isn't bettering your life. It's an incentive to get back on the street to possibly, you know, feed into the recidivism of the prison system, this revolving door that everybody talks about. And they talk about that because the system is built that way.
Yeah.
Probation is built to keep you in the system, and parole is built to keep to try to get you out of the system. But there's so many hidden things inside of parole that you don't know that one day you go to Walmart and then you show up at home and then 10 minutes later, parole officer's there. You're going to prison, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, what? Why? Because your wife bought a bottle of vodka.
That's like in the position I'm at right now. Like,
being obviously, on IPS.
I just got told on Tuesday that they're going to be talking to me sometime this week, probably tomorrow, about lowering my terms of probation.
possibly getting stepped down from IPS to regular.
But like that whole thing, like there was that episode, remember, where the fucking my phone time was off, and it was like off an hour. Mm-hmm. If I wouldn't have realized my phone was off, bro, I would have been fucked.
Yeah,
just exactly. Little things like that. Little things like that get you fucked. But
yeah, it's super easy, but and. The stigma goes through the justice system harder than anywhere else, and it's spread a lot through the justice system, and by that I mean shows like Cops or Live PD.
Yeah.
The way that they showcase drug addicts, and a lot of the times those drug addicts you'll see they're you know, they have meth or crack or something like that, and those are the ones that act really erratic and they do crazy shit or they got caught breaking in somewhere. People just get into bad situations when it comes to those types of things. But if you, and that's just a snapshot in the life of what a drug addict actually does. A drug addict has the most boring, like the monotony that people talk about, like working at an assembly line at a warehouse, you know, like you stand here and put the sticker on this thing and then it goes down the conveyor belt to that person who puts a stamp on it. The monotony of being a drug addict is the same thing, because every day you wake up, you look at your phone, you go through Facebook, you keep refreshing until the plug's on.
Or your phone goes, can't refresh anymore.
Yeah. And then you just go, damn it. Fuck. And then you want to kill yourself. Yeah. And then really you're just spending all day waiting for somebody who you hate, somebody who's a dirtbag and you know it, and they don't care about you. They barely want your money. No. And they definitely don't want you to
That was so
point.
Annoying.
Of course.
I'm like, dude, I have $100 fucking. They're like,
who cares?
Fuck you.
But it's the entire day of a drug addict is built around a cell phone.
Yeah.
And traveling from here to go get it. And now the illegal activities come in when you're like, tonight I'm going to be sick. I have a window of 5-6 hours right now to get money. This person just messaged me and said, hey, I've got some great stuff. And you go, oh my God, how am I going to figure? And then you're like, hey mom.
Yeah.
I need groceries. And she goes, oh, I'll go grocery shopping with you. You go, fuck you, mom.
No,
I hate you.
I don't want you to.
Yeah. You don't trust me. You look like a fucking Halloween decoration that's been ran over and peed on.
Like that picture I have of myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Jesus.
Exactly. That's what you look like, and you're telling your mom, no, I'm doing great. I'm trying to go buy kale at Trader Joe's.
Why are you so skinny?
And
I'm
you're
fucking vegan,
I'm dieting. I'm not getting vitamin D, mom.
God.
Jesus. But... And so, I mean, it's not going to be an easy thing to try to change the stigma on addicts.
No.
And it's also tough because a lot of addicts, I mean, when I'm saying addicts, I'm talking about recovering addicts, because addicts who are in the midst of their addiction, they're not themselves.
No.
Your emotions have been shut off. Your priorities have now been turned to, so the life of an addict is super easy in that you have one thing on your list. Get him to the Greek had this absolutely right. He said, your life's to do is a laundry list. Mine is but one thing.
Yeah.
Mine says drugs.
Yep.
That's it.
Get
That's
lit.
It. Yeah. Your only job is to get drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So for that disease to be a felonious crime, to go to prison because you're like, I'm gonna be sick if I don't buy this stupid thing that was created by somebody and given to me most likely in a cigarette cellophane that was burnt with a lighter. If I don't put this into my body somehow, I'm gonna be sick.
Yeah.
Now I'm sick as shit. I'm you know, diarrhea, vomiting, hallucinations in jail because I got caught going to buy something.
Mm.
And if you put it in those terms, like say it was I have a potassium deficiency and I'm going to a dude's house to buy a banana.
Yeah.
And you get pulled over right after you grab that banana. And the cop goes, get out of the car.
Yeah.
Is that a fucking banana? And you go, ah, oh, man, that's not mine.
It's a plantain.
My friend borrowed my car earlier, and it must have fallen out of him. Mm-hmm. it fell out of his prison pocket.
Yeah, yeah.
I swear it's not mine. And then you go to prison for that. You go to prison for literally, banana. If you think of it in the terms of that, okay, yes, heroin is a dangerous drug.
Yeah.
I mean, it counts as a narcotic. But so meth is a dangerous drug. Heroin's a dangerous drug. But it's dangerous to the person utilizing it.
Yeah.
But then you think, guess what else is illegal? Suicide. Suicide is illegal. So if you kill yourself, you're going to prison. Okay.
I was just going to ask, how the fuck does that work? Let's say I decide to go fucking kill myself today, right?
Uh-huh.
And they're like, it's fucking illegal. It's a felony. So who the fuck would that charge go to if that's a thing?
Well, it doesn't go to anybody because you're dead. But I think attempting suicide.
Attempting it?
Yeah.
What?
They take you to, you know, a mental facility.
Yeah.
But you're locked down.
Mm-hmm.
You're against your will. You are under the state's care. You're just not in the jail. You're at a level one facility where you're under constant medical supervision.
Mm.
So that's how that works. Because I know with the military, it's like your property of the United States of America. So even drinking, they're like, you're abusing property of the United States of America. You could be dishonorably discharged for that. Like, and that's horrific on your record. That's like you go to a job interview and they're like, so what would you say is like your worst quality? And you go, I kill kids. You know what I mean? Whenever I see a kid, I can't help it. I choke them to death.
What?
And, I mean, you know, everyone has their thing though. Everyone's got their weird thing that they do. And mine just happens to be, killing other people's kids.
Murder.
But yeah, it's, you know, obviously that's a super extreme example of it.
Yes.
But it's pretty much the same shit. If you think about it, you know what I mean? Same thing. But yeah, I've been posting a lot of stuff, cause I post a lot of stuff on the Instagram, and a lot of the stuff that's been posted lately has been all stuff revolving around, addiction and, you know, the police's involvement with someone's addiction. And I've been getting a lot of comments and messages from people. And I got a message today from this woman, Stephanie, who said, because I posted something about Suboxone. Suboxone in the recovering addict community, there's a subsection of recovering addicts who look down on people like me and like Stephanie's baby brother who was on Suboxone to kick his heroin habit. And
they just call it Suboxone maintenance or whatever.
Yeah.
They call it in the rehabs.
And yeah, that's what it's called. I'm on maintenance right now.
Right.
But recovering addicts who did it, you know, a different way. They went to rehab and, you know, they took it, or they took methadone, or they took some other kind of medication to get them through the worst 10 days of it. And then they're kind of just self-maintaining using sponsors and counseling and things like that. But that doesn't work for everybody. And for that subsection of people to go, you're not as good as us. So there's elitism in recovery.
Yeah, I kind of realized that when I was out in Prescott with a bunch of people. But like there was this dude, Adam, who was fucking awesome. He was like one of the he was like a counselor for people. And the one thing he always said, he's like, people always talk about Suboxone and how it's cheating, right? People say that. That's what people said, right?
But
this dude was a junkie for years, bro, and he was like, I had to suck it up and take Suboxone, so I fully fucking support it because I've seen it save so many fucking people, and like, it's just such a bad people. Just like you said, there's people fucking elitist little pricks who think they're better.
And that's the shitty thing is that people who go on Suboxone maintenance have a much higher rate of success than people who just try to cut it and go cold turkey. And of course, with taking sublingual Suboxone, there's, you know, there's chances of relapsing because you can just not take it.
Yeah.
But if you're serious about your shit, you take it, or you take the route that I did and not even worry about that and just get the injection. And then it's out of your hands. It's out of your head. It's not a thought. And it completely changes your life from I'm in recovery and I have to think about this all the time. And it's all consuming. And I had my son was, you know, very young at the time and all this other shit and dealing with work and all these other things. And it's like, I can't just think about, you know, because they tell you in rehab, you got to be selfish and think about your recovery and put your recovery first. If you can't do that all the time, getting the Sublocade shot, the injection, it flipped me from 100% in recovery to my life is now normalized.
Right.
I don't have to do anything extra. I go once a month and I talk to a very nice woman, Emily, who is the person who gives me my injections at the Arizona Recovery Center. And I send as many people as I can to that place because it's such a supportive environment, and it's so, there's so much compassion coming from the people who work there. You can, it basically immediately, as soon as you walk into this place and you get greeted and you talk to these people, you feel automatically like, oh, this is like a for real support group. These people honestly care. They're not just doing this for community service. They're not just doing this for, you know, tax credits or for charity. That's their job that they chose to do. They get paid for it, but there's no airs of them like putting on a show for you. This is 100% what they want to do.
I didn't even know that that place existed until you told me about it. I didn't even know that they had a methadone fucking clinic out here until somebody told me about it.
That recently happened as well.
That shit, that's something I always asked about too. I'm like, where the fuck are these places at? Cause
yeah, they didn't exist. Arizona Recovery Center is turning 2 years old in a couple months, or either later this month or within the next couple months. I think it actually might be in May. But there's a lot of, like, this place didn't have that for the, basically the entire time when we were both in the deepest part of our addiction. That wasn't an option at all. Mm-mm. There was nowhere you could go. You had to leave the city or leave the state in order to get any help. And
or resorting to the streets to get fucking Suboxones and shit.
Yeah, and you can't always. And those people went to Vegas or, you know, Phoenix or something.
Most of the time they're like, here's two.
Yeah, I've got, and they're 25 a piece. When you could go, you know, you can get on state insurance and get a full month script for free.
Yeah.
And it'll completely change your life. I've never seen someone go on Suboxone and then die from it. Never fucking happened. But I've seen plenty of people get off of heroin, relapse, and OD.
Yeah.
Same. Too many to count.
Same.
Yeah. There's been, there's three that I can think of last year that died.
My buddy just, the one who I was in rehab with, just passed away. He was sober for fucking months. He was sober, bro. He was clean. He was working and shit. And it was just that one decision of, go help these peeps out. And they help. He helped them out and got some pills and fucking took them, and that was it.
Yeah.
They're laced with fucking fentanyl.
Of course. And now people are just going off the deep end. They're going straight to fentanyl. They're smoking fentanyl pills.
Yeah, there's fucking kids shooting them. I'm like, what?
Yeah, that's insane.
And I was like, nerds.
Because even back when
do heroin.
Back when we were doing it, it was like, that was something that we were all scared of.
Yeah.
Until it was like, everywhere. Oh, we can't get anything. Oh, but we can find, they were calling it China White.
Yeah.
And it wasn't China White. We all knew it was, they were like, well, it's actually methyl fentanyl. Like, okay, well, of course, it's not actual China White.
Duh.
This is Arizona. China White comes from Afghanistan.
Yeah.
So it's not coming out here. It's not going to make it all the way out here and it still be white. No. Trust me, it's going to be darker by now just because of all the steppings on. Once it hits Boston and travels all the way through the middle of the country, it's not coming here pure.
That shit's so crazy. That video we saw on Vice, how they were mixing it, and the dude's just pouring
a cauldron
fucking
of fentanyl
dude,
and
he's just
heroin.
Pouring that shit in there, like,
yeah.
I'm like, Oh my god,
it was
dude.
Just a giant barrel filled with fentanyl powder, just yeah. crushed up fentanyl
and fucking what heroin and
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, just straight powdered heroin. Yeah,
Jesus.
Yeah, and and that was all coming straight through from Mexico.
Yeah, from Mexico,
and that's of course where.
Yeah,
pretty much all the black tar heroin comes from.
They were getting their
here.
Fentanyl from what, China or some shit? That's what they were saying.
I mean, I wouldn't doubt it. Yeah. It makes sense. But I don't even know if I ever got to the point that I started about the whole changing the stigma thing. Because I'm trying to... Basically, I'm trying to accumulate as many people who are... Not even in recovery, but just support the idea of changing the stigma against recovering addicts to make it a topic that's more well discussed and more well understood by people who were never involved with it or never had anyone in their family do it. Because it's such a terrible thing and it's not really talked about very much. Like, people talk about, I don't even know what they talk. It's if it's not about trans issues or I don't know, breastfeeding or chest feeding, whatever the fuck, Mr. Potato Head. People are dying by the thousands.
Yeah.
From opioid addiction.
Yeah.
And meth and coke. All these drugs.
Things.
Yeah. Thousands of people.
Yeah.
Just in America, just in this fucking state probably, are dying from this. And they're like, we're going to call it chest feeding.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me tell you something. You can Google... Everybody knows how to Google things. If you look up where milk comes from in the human body, it does not come from the chest. Breasts are upon the chest.
Mm-hmm.
And I can also tell you this. Men and women, they both have breasts. You can say what you want, but the pectoral is the male breast. Females just have fatty tissue to, you know, make the female breast. And they also have milk ducts. So calling it chest feeding is insane. And to call it, what do they call it? Were they going to call it human milk?
I don't even.
So, I mean, why can't it just be, that's just what it is, you know? It's called breast milk because it comes from a breast. Doesn't matter what gender you identify as. It has nothing to do with that. It has nothing to do with it. So for anybody to change that to fit a very narrow percentage of the United States of America, like, it's making it weird. You know what I mean? It's not making it if you guys, if everyone wants to be equal, nobody should get special,
I feel like,
rights and change words and do all this extra.
Because all that shit. All that shit, I give a fuck less about because it's annoying as fuck. But it's like these people are fucking tripping over what? These fucking words. And it's like they're setting everybody up. Like, it's changed now, motherfucker. You can no longer say this.
Yeah.
You're a fucking piece of shit.
You're a bigot.
It's over.
Yeah.
For you. But it's like, who fucking cares?
It blows my mind. Why is it that...
Because I don't.
No, like, anybody who has a brain in their head and a heart in their chest, they wouldn't... And I'm talking about people that are in... That would be in the trans community or any of the other communities that have any of these issues that it's companies or I don't even know who can change the term to chest milk. Who does that?
Webster's.
Is that because it has to be?
Yeah.
But I can't wrap my head around where is this coming from?
Would it be like in a thesaurus maybe?
I don't
instead?
Think
like,
so.
This is...
Did Jesus come back and he was like, hey, everybody, I just have one thing to say. It's called chest milk. Okay.
Yep.
Because both genders. What the fuck ever.
Dude, it's been one thing for what? Hundreds
ever?
And hundreds and whatever, it's however long?
Since people.
Right.
Since people existed.
And now it's like, I don't fucking care.
I just feel like they're going way too far beyond because this what everyone wanted in the beginning was equality.
Right.
Now what they want, this isn't equality anymore. This is now changing into supremacy.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Go back to what you just said. Equality,
yeah,
right?
This means equal for everybody. Why can't we call it, because I'm a cisgendered, straight, heterosexual male, why can't me and my wife, who breastfeeds, why can't we call it breastfeeding? And someone who identifies as a woman or identifies as a man, whatever the case may be, why can't they refer to it as that? And my vernacular stay the same and theirs stays the way that they want it. And this way it doesn't affect anybody else.
I just don't like...
This is called equality.
I don't like how that things change and like all of a sudden it's like it's illegal to say something that somebody fucking has said since they were children and learned words.
Oh, and like, it's not called women do not have periods anymore.
Oh, God.
They're called people who menstruate.
Well, I was going to say, I don't have those, so...
Me neither. So I never have to talk about it, but I feel like I don't even know. We need to get a trans woman on here. We've had a trans man on here before. Mm-hmm. But I need to ask a trans woman because I don't know. I'm pretty sure they don't get ovaries put into their body and they don't have a uterus.
How does that work?
Because a period is the shedding of uterine lining.
Maybe we could ask our friend the Cheeto Guido.
Oh, see Mario.
See if he maybe...
But I don't think he would know because he's... He lives as a guy.
Right. But I'm just saying, like, maybe you would have more of an idea than we would. But
possibly. I'll hit him up and we can see about that. We're going to whoosh real quick.
Whoosh it, dude.
And then we'll swing back around. Bada bing, bada boom. Sorry, we got off on a... Went off on a tangent.
A tangy.
We listen to a lot of podcasts and things come up and people talk about things. And I like to stay out of it. For the most part, mainly because it doesn't directly affect me. And I've always been the type of person that I think people should be able to live however they want. I've always said that about, you know, gay people, lesbian people, trans people, whatever people want to be that. Right. By all means. I have no issue with anybody doing what they fucking want. This is your life. Please do what you want to do with it. Because I would hate it if I felt any of these ways and anybody was like, nope, to me, fuck you. That's what I think. So obviously I don't want to tell anybody they can't say these things. And I'm totally happy that there are thousands and hundreds of thousands probably of people who are willing to make all of these changes to accommodate these specific groups who want, you know, certain words to change. That's fine.
Yeah, so be it.
Once it starts coming to my door, like there's not a huge trans community in this city, so I mean it doesn't affect us really at all. I mean, if it did and I had trans friends and that's the words that they wanted to use, that's cool. I don't care. It's nothing to get angry about and be like, fuck you, I'm not changing shit. It doesn't bother me. I don't care.
I talk about being annoyed about these things, but it's mainly because like it's put out there, you know, and it's like headlining news. Check this out.
What
like
I think
this-
it is the people who are putting it out there are so frustrating because they aren't of the ilk of people who are asking. I don't know that it's the people who they're talking about are the ones asking for this change. That's where my issue comes in.
I doubt some people really could care less. They don't care less.
But like, it's a college age young white blonde girl and she's telling people you need to start asking babies for their permission to change their diapers, and I'm like, you're out of your fucking mind.
No thanks.
My kid's not going to run around dripping shit all over my house.
No.
I'm going to tackle him and change his diaper. And if he says no, I go, too bad.
Yeah.
I'm your dad.
Yep.
So that's insanity. To ask a four-year-old, what gender do you feel like, is crazy. Because children don't grasp gender. Their sexual identity should not be built. And if your child's sexual identity is built, you're touching your kids. Now stop. bad.
No touchy.
Don't touch your fucking kids. Anyways, let's go back. We like to trail off into a hardcore cancelable area momentarily. But we'll always get back on track, everybody. I promise. Sometimes people want to hear it. Sometimes people don't. If you don't want to hear it, you know, it started, you know, 6 minutes ago. Yeah. Fast forward till now. You know what I mean?
Which is...
You know, it's about 3 minutes into the second after the first whoosh.
Yeah.
If you stopped here, you're good to go, dude. We're back on track. We're back on topic. So now we started talking about the stigma, and we're talking about the people who are commenting on these pictures, because now we have there's a larger group of people following our Instagram, which is amazing, and I'm so happy to have all these people on there, and they're people who we have a lot in common with. And as I made one of those posts about what addicts have in common, it proved it.
Yeah,
because they were like, this shit is spot on.
Yeah,
we can all spot drug deals from a mile away. I don't remember what the other two were, but they were spot on. Okay.
I feel like sometimes I just go drug deal.
Yeah.
It looks like that.
I do it all the time. I see it all the time because I've done every type of drug deal there is. So the other thing I wanted to talk about was first I'll say this. It should be a quick thing, but it probably won't be knowing me. And I'm going to look at the camera now so it's more engaging. I'm looking at you people. Now,
what's up, dudes and dudettes?
What's crapping in everybody? So there's a goal that we want to try to get to with this podcast, because obviously being able to even feel like we're emotionally supporting anybody who's, you know, going through recovery or having any kind of issues like that, or a family member or something like that, it feels good to know that we're even possibly contributing to, you know, the happiness of one person. And that's fantastic. To change one life is more than enough.
Yeah.
But rather than just an emotional or just this kind of ethereal feeling of maybe we're helping somebody, we want to get to a point where we can set up some kind of a situation where we can collect donations. We'll donate as well. We'll find charities that help, you know, help different types of groups of people, like addicts, people with mental health issues. There's a charity for LGBT, homeless LGBT youth, just different charities that we feel like it's for a good cause, and it's something that means a lot to us that we feel like we should help them out. And to be able to do something like that would be amazing, because then there's a physical feeling that comes along with actually going and doing something. Like, yeah, we'll collect the donations and then put the donations down, and then we can post the receipt and be like, everybody who donated, you get a little bit of this feeling. You helped contribute to this thank you letter from this charity that's like, thank you for donating this much money. You get a little bit of that gratification from doing something good, and it always feels good to do something great for somebody else, especially people who are in a less, you know, in a less advantageous position than you might be in at the time. And not that we're doing, you know, not that we're fucking millionaires or anything like that, but we have a steady job. We make enough money. I have my, you know, my place. We can pay our bills, and, you know, you can pay your fines.
Yeah.
you can help raise your kids. You know, you can put food and, you know, clothes on their back. You can put food on their back and clothes in their mouths.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which every parent wants to be able to at some point.
Doing that.
Just pour, you know, nacho cheese on their head or something like
next
that.
Next time they're like, I want strawberry milk. And be like, yeah.
Down your back. But so that was one of the other things I wanted to put out there. Just so we know as a group that there's a common goal. This isn't just a thing to sit here and say stupid shit and just reminisce on being dirtbags.
Yeah.
Like, this is, it started as that.
There's a time and place for that, but.
Yeah, and that's here. But it can also be a conduit for good.
Yeah,
it
positivity.
Can, yeah, because we did so much, we spent so much time being a drain on everybody.
Yeah.
And putting out nothing but dirtbaggy vibes and negativity into the world that we had some bad karmic shit built up. That, you know, something was going to happen eventually. There's a tumor growing at the base of my spine.
Yep.
And I have no idea about it. I got sleep apnea. Fuck you. So,
I just wanted a Pepsi, man.
You got Pepsi, dude. You got fucking Pepsi.
God damn it.
But yeah, so I really want to use the still fucking up Instagram page as kind of a group for everybody to kind of share what they're going through. I want to be able to use this podcast as a way to kind of put out the message of all the people who follow us on Instagram or listen to the podcast. Just because the more information that's out there, the better. Because everyone went through this a little bit differently, and everybody took a little bit something different out with them when they came out of recovery. The way that they went through recovery is different. And that was the other thing I wanted to talk about. That was a great lead-in, Aaron. Thank you.
Well, that is perfect lead-in. Because I was going to say, fucking...
When I mentioned people, it in the truck earlier.
The people who fucking have climbed out of rock bottom and decided to stop digging?
Yeah.
Props, dude. Cause
absolutely.
I was... You know how they always say, like, oh, fucking... Once you hit rock bottom, that's it. Like, no, I kept digging, dude. Mm-hmm. I kept fucking digging and digging, and I was like... Oh, yeah. There's only one place to go.
Yeah. The last cut is the deepest. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's so, like I was saying before, what I was talking to you about, there's different ways that people go through recovery because there's different types of people who become addicts. So there's different routes out. There's not one direct road out of drug addiction to get into recovery. And recovery never stops. You're no. on that fucking road forever now. So strap in and just, strap in, deal with it, try to turn it into something positive. Yeah. This is reach what
out,
we did.
Reach out to people.
Reach around people. You know what I mean?
Thank you.
Reach out, reach around everybody. Yeah. Okay. Let's all hold hands. So the way, so basically I've gone through, we've probably both gone through every way of getting clean from. Yeah. So there is the involuntary cold turkey, which not really recommended because that's either through incarceration.
Yeah, so forced upon.
Yeah, it's either through incarceration or the connect is out, which happens a lot.
Yeah.
So therefore you are involuntarily cold turkey quitting. Doing the drug choice.
I've never gotten a text saying I'm out and go, and I've went like, yeah, I think I'm gonna stop today.
I'm clean, dude.
Yeah,
but people will do that. I've heard people say I'm clean now, and I'm like, oh cool. How long? They're like, till tomorrow.
Yeah,
and I'm like, oh shit.
Dude will be back. So
yeah, that's insane. And then the dude doesn't come back ever. He's dead. But so that one's not really a super good route to take.
No.
But the voluntary cold turkey, it can work. You got to get through the bad shit. And I've done that numerous times. I always would, you know, come clean to my family. Like, look, I'd try to soften the blow at first. I'd be like, I was doing Percocets. And then later I would call my mom and be like, I was doing heroin. And then she'd go, I figured. And I go, damn it.
Fuck.
And then... she would, you know, try to buy things, St. John's wort and valerian root and all these natural things. I even got this stuff called withdrawal ease that was, there was a day and a night. It did fuck all. It literally was rubbish, as the British would say. I did the kratom thing. I tried taking white Meng Da kratom. I tried taking red Bali kratom. I
tried kratom, but never... I had to take
25 filled capsules to maybe make me feel a little bit better. And I don't even think it worked. It was probably a placebo effect.
I used to, you know, try meth too. And I was like,
but meth always made it worse.
Oh my God.
So that's the other route of recovery is just, the addiction swap.
Yeah.
So you trade heroin for meth, or you trade meth for heroin, or you go to Xanax, which was usually my choice. If I couldn't get heroin, I'd go for Xanax or pills. All bad ideas, obviously. Then you have the medication route, which is what I ended up taking. You've done before. You went to see the doctor who I see still.
I just made poor choices and...
Yeah, got out of that situation. Everything's cool. You're better now.
Yeah.
You chose this other route, which was rehab. Right. You did the rehab route, which also works for a lot of people. Which
I had to voluntarily do.
Absolutely. And you were even telling me before that you knew you would have to go there to be done.
Yeah.
Because you kind of were thrown into this at a way earlier age than I was. And at that point, it's like you weren't even mature enough to wipe your own ass before you were shooting meth. So surprise.
15, 16, couldn't wipe my own ass. So.
Yeah, crazy. And that's, you know, partially why I figured you'd never get out of it.
It happens.
But, I skimmed over, there's methadone, but I
don't agree with it.
I've done the methadone thing for a small amount of time. I have people in my extended family who are on methadone. I also have friends that are on methadone. Yeah. And obviously methadone is a better option than staying on your DOC, which would be heroin at that point. But of course I would say that I would much prefer someone do Suboxone over methadone, because there's actually a plan to get you off of Suboxone. Methadone is kind of, you're staying on this until we kick you off and you have to deal with the withdrawals from methadone, which are way worse and twice as long.
Which you could die from.
Yeah, they're aggressive. Like I know someone that's been on methadone for over 20 years, and if they were off of methadone for a week, they're toast.
Doomed.
Because they're also, I think, late 60s, early 70s. Yeah. They're completely... There's no way they would survive.
I've heard so many fucking stories of people being on that shit for years and years and years and years, and they're like... And I've heard, and some of these people are like, dude, I don't know. I don't want to be on this shit anymore, but I don't know what the fuck to do.
You can switch to Suboxone for methadone now. They have a way to get you... I've talked a friend into trying. She was on methadone for a long time, and now she's starting to go see Emily at Arizona Recovery Center and try to get on Suboxone instead of taking methadone.
Yeah.
'Cause methadone, you can double up your dose and get high. There's no ceiling. Suboxone has a 12 milligram ceiling.
I've heard so many things about methadone that you could do just to...
Get high.
Get lit.
Of course. You get fucked up pretty much every time.
I've done it.
I've seen people, you know, they'll take their dose 5 years in and they're nodding out.
Yeah.
Still. And Suboxone, there's none of that.
I've seen fools, actually, which is weird, because I've seen fools on Suboxone who were overstayed it, but they were upping their doses, right? They would start on a low dose to start... to kick themselves off of it, but eventually got such a high dose that these people would be during groups, you know, they take their subs in the morning and the first thing they're fucking slumped.
You could also skip a day on Suboxone and then take a Suboxone and then you'll get high from it, but that's why I went with the injection, so there's no chance of that.
I tried asking them at the center I was like, do you guys do that, or is that an option, or but like I'm not saying that's what that place is, but like I've heard of other places that put the Suboxone on for people, because there where I was at, they put you on it and then they get you off of it.
Yeah, like, see, the goal for Suboxone, they want to keep you on it for at least like 2 years.
Yeah.
And there's reasons, there's like neurological reasons for it. They want to be able to get the impulse control problem under control. They want to get the, because the impulse control problem is really what the issue of addiction comes down to, is that you can't hear a trigger, see a trigger, smell a trigger without snapping into action and being like, oh, I got to go get high now.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. I've walked into bathrooms at gas stations and I was like, oh, someone cooked up a shot in here just a minute ago. There's that.
I'll always smell that burnt meth pipe thing. I'm like,
you smell that?
I've smelled just meth clouds driving around, but there's that smell of like vinegar mixed with marshmallowy weirdness that is heroin being cooked. That's much different than it being smoked. And those are all triggers that would be like, oh shit, I gotta hit somebody up, I gotta do something, I gotta get high now.
I just saw spoons bubbling in my head right now.
Yeah.
Like, not even kidding.
Yeah, see, that's why I'm such a big proponent of... Do you want to play footsies with me, dude?
I keep putting my foot out there and
your foot's there. My foot's been in the same spot literally to the point where it's falling asleep now.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm such a big proponent of Suboxone because it's done so well for me. And I know that if people are willing to do it, it could do well for them. Because there's not enough side effects to even speak of. Like, sometimes it's hard to pee. That's literally my biggest issue, is that sometimes it takes me a minute to pee.
God, I hate that.
Yeah, it sucks. But I'd rather do that than have to think about staying away from certain things.
That totally feels like when you have a boner and you're trying to, like, pee.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
God damn it. I'm trying to get it out.
It's the same shit.
But you're like...
And you know what it is? Do you know why? What it is? The boner thing? The boner thing has to do with your prostate.
Oh.
And the prostate in your bladder, the correlation between the prostate and the bladder is what's causing the pee stream to be so weak.
Mm.
Is that when you're hard, your prostate is like swollen.
Right.
And it's kind of blocking off your bladder from being able to push. And that's what boners come from. Your morning wood.
Yeah.
Morning wood is your bladder pushing on your prostate, stimulating your prostate, and it gives you a fucking... a hard on.
So really, like, laying on my stomach, of course I'm hard.
No, it means that you like things up your butt.
Oh.
No, not really. It's the dude G spot, honestly. That's just what it is.
Is that a play on words? Because I like laying on my belly?
No.
Oh, okay. That's what I thought.
No, it's just that's legitimately what it is.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, that's legitimately what it is. Is that your bladder pushes on your prostate, you get hard. You're fucking hard, dog.
Erect.
Yeah, you get erect. Erectum damn near killed him, you know what I mean? oh, shit. I thought I had something to say, and then I totally fucking spaced it. That was pretty much all the ways that you can go through recovery. And like a lot of people say, it's something that you have to choose to be sober every single day. You have to make the right choice every single day.
See, like,
that's one way to think of it.
Having to, like, we have to choose every day, but like when you have to get clean involuntarily, right?
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time when that happened to me, I was like, fuck, I can't wait to get out, like, and get high.
Of course.
I don't give a fuck. Like,
because there's always that excuse from a person who gets, like, locked up or someone's out. It's like, I didn't get that one last good one.
Yeah.
I didn't get to get that one last real good one that I could hold on to for the rest of my life. There will never be that last good one unless you OD and die. That's your last good one, legitimately. Because I don't remember my last good one, and I don't give a shit that I don't, because the last good one is directly related to some of the worst feelings ever. Because even going on to Suboxone, you have to be in full withdrawals to even get your first strip. So people are like, well, it's just a way of getting out of it unscathed. No, it's not. You're still plenty scathed. And don't think I haven't gone through it 100 times.
Yeah.
I've probably spent a calendar year sick.
Same.
Throughout the decade of using pills and heroin, a calendar year. Guaranteed throughout a decade, I spent 365 days feeling like shit out of that 10 years.
Just a fucking 365-day come down, pretty much?
Yeah. If you want to add it all up, between the ages of 19 and 29... guarantee, dude, that there were 365 of them where I wasn't feeling so hot.
Yeah.
You know, I was feeling too shabby.
Right.
Not too shabby. I was feeling too shabby. Yeah. You ever heard someone say that?
Too shabby?
Like, they're like, just how shabby? You doing? Because, you know, not I'll say shabby? It a lot. Not too shabby.
I say that all the time.
Yeah. But what if someone's like, hey, how you doing? You go, and then, or you're like, hey, how you doing? They go, too shabby.
Pretty fucking shabby.
Yeah. I'm like, hella shabby, dude. Is shabby even a fucking word?
I don't know.
That's gonna
apparently,
be our new thing. The I've been trying to think of, like, what would, like, you know how Chris D'Elia, he called his audience the babies. Rick Glassman calls the Glassman boppers or the goblins. Yeah. I was like, what would we call the SFU podcast listeners? And I always thought like the fuck ups or something like that. But I'm also like, I don't want to like be insulting to them. But the shabbies, dude.
The shabbies.
The shabbies. Because they're just, you know, they're doing shabby.
Yeah.
Or they're doing not too shabby.
Not too shabby. Because that's
basically like getting just this, just the moments, the 3 months leading after your last dose of your DOC, and you get into a recovery. Not too shabby is about the best you're going to hope for.
I feel like that's a constant thing every day. Like,
yeah.
How are you feeling? Not too shabby, I guess.
Yeah. But that's about as good as you're going to hope for the first 3 months, I think. Because then there's moments, obviously everybody has this. There's peaks and valleys. There's I'm feeling not shabby at all, not which shabby is great. Enough, yeah. Or I'm not. Yeah. Or I feel like I should be shabbier.
Yeah.
I've been shabbier for sure. So the answer would always be not too shabby because I've been super shabby. You know what I mean? I've been the shabbiest motherfucker ever. And the shabbiness is all too clear in my mind. You know what I mean? So that's got to be part of whatever the title of this episode is. It's going to be something to do with shabby. I'm not going to think of it. I can't think of it now.
Yeah.
Not too shabby, dude. But we'll have to get people to send us a brief-ish couple paragraphs or paragraph or two, whatever. Just a description of what your like a paragraph of what your life was on drugs, and then a paragraph of, you know, how your recovery went and like what did you choose to do with your sobriety. You know what I mean? Like, I dove into, you know, I always loved music and playing instruments and stuff, and I've done it, you know, for 17, 18 years now, and I still did a little bit when I was on drugs, but I've been diving into like learning music theory real deep and fucking getting and playing instruments every single day for at least an hour a day, and starting the podcast and trying to promote a positive attitude in a recovery community that's kind of a newfound thing, at least for this podcast, trying to get into the recovery society that has been existing on Instagram for a while, it seems. Because I go through all these different pages.
We're building our own little community.
Yeah, dude. And I look at the followers, and it's like most of the people I'm already following on all of these different pages, they're all interconnected already.
Right.
And it would be cool to have, you know, to try to build a community of people that you can always feel like you could tell somebody whatever if you're having different kinds of feelings about it.
That's what I was about to say. I want people, like, even on the Instagram, whatever, everyone who's listening, you know what I mean? Like, if you're following us on the SFU page, direct message us, dude.
Yeah.
If you're going through something or you know somebody who's going through something, that's what I really want. I want somebody to talk to me and be like, hey, dude, this is what I've gone through or something like that. And I'll be like, cool, can I tell you how what I went through? And then we'll be like,
and they go, wow. No, I already heard what you went through. Like, I listened to the podcast.
I don't care. Dickhead.
Yeah, I already know.
Yeah, but like just being able to find
because both of our Instagram handles are on the SFU page in the description. If you message the SFU page, you're messaging me. And then obviously Juan, his name is in the title of his.
I'm right there, dude.
And then my personal and my music Instagram is under Lego 666 underscore is my personal slash where I post my music stuff. And I also post it on the YouTube, which brings me to my last and final point before we end episode 30, motherfucker.
What?
Subscribe.
Yeah.
Just subscribe.
Dude, am I really going to have to point at it again? Do I have to?
Subscribe. I already did.
I'm going to do it anyways.
Subscribe. Right. It's over there somewhere. Right. I don't know. But just subscribe. It's free. it doesn't hurt you, but it feels good on our nipples.
And when you don't do it, it does hurt us.
Oh, for real. For every view we get and they're not subscribed, I'm like, why do they hate us?
Yeah, they freaking hate us, dude.
I go, why did they abandon us?
Is it me?
Yeah. And I go, Juan, what the fuck did you do?
Yeah, yeah. It is you.
Why are you telling them not to subscribe?
I'm not.
Fucking big-titted animal.
Subscribe.
Yeah, do it. It's easy.
Gosh.
We got to send that in. I call you a big-titted animal, and then we send that into YMH. You know what I mean? Well, I hope one day we get enough people watching that we could tell them, hey, go up to your girlfriend and call her a big booty hoe.
Yeah.
Or, like, just credit card her butt crack or something. You know, just put your finger down her butt crack.
And for the ladies, smack your dude's butt or something. Or
smack him on the wiener.
Credit card his butt crack.
Credit card his nut sack.
Whatever.
Yeah. Don't flick his balls. That's pretty mean.
No, you know what I mean? Be thoughtful.
Call him a fat cocked monster. You know what I mean? He'll probably feel
very
really
positive. I like that.
Yeah. He'll probably be like, oh my God.
Oh, thanks.
Like Shane Smith was talking about that on Without a Country. Guys don't get enough compliments from girls. Whatever. Just go listen to the episode. But this has been episode 30 of SFU Podcast. And I thank you much for watching. Please subscribe.
Thank you for watching.
The Still Hooking It Podcast. Look at my ball.
Still fucking up.